The only way I personally think this is going to improve is we get more people actually watching the women's game, seeing the skill that is on show. You know, I went through a really, really tough time with it, but I didn't speak out, or I didn't know how to even reach out and ask for help. To be belting out your anthem, playing in a World Cup and a home World Cup at that, with your family and friends and a huge crowd behind you, it was amazing.
Hi everyone, I'm Conor Nolan and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindset, motivations and opinions of the elite talent and brands represented by Sport Endorse. Season 2 of the podcast is proudly sponsored by Nosen, an Irish-made natural body care brand specifically tailored for athletes and active people. Their range of products are formulated with natural and proven active ingredients and designed to promote better performance and quicker recovery. Environmentally conscious, sustainable and made with natural ingredients, their products are absolutely amazing. You can find and purchase their full range at www.nielsen.com. Today's guest is Irish rugby player Hannah Tyrrell, who's been a consistent member of both the Ireland Women's Sevens and 15s rugby teams since 2014, earning 55 caps. Most recently, Hannah took the reins at 10 for their Six Nations win against Italy in October and will be hoping to replicate that success in their upcoming campaign. Beyond sport, she's a proud ambassador for Pieta House and a previous ambassador for the Tackle Your Feelings campaign. This was a really interesting conversation where nothing was off the table, and we explored some fascinating topics around rugby, life, and legacy. Enjoy.
So Hannah, you're very welcome to The Sit Down. It's a particularly special episode because not only is this the first episode of season 2, but we're also recording this on St. Patrick's Day. So thank you very much for joining us.
All right, Conor. Thanks so much for having me. Delighted to be here.
For those that aren't familiar with you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So yeah, my name's Hannah Tyrrell and I currently play for the Irish women's rugby team. I played a little bit of Gaelic football before joining rugby a little bit later on in life. And I played for the Irish rugby team for the last 7 years now. And I never thought that it'd be such a big part of my life, but very lucky to be in the situation that I am. Getting to represent my country and travel the world. Outside of sport, I'm a secondary school teacher. I teach history and geography, and I absolutely love it. I love going into the classroom every day and trying to make a difference in these kids' lives, and you know, just seeing the joy on their faces and watching their faces just light up when they find out all these new information. Just it's so nice to have something other than sport in my life that I have such a passion for.
So take us back to where it all started. I mean, what kind of got you started playing rugby?
So I started playing rugby back in 2013. I was 23 at the time, and I had been playing Gaelic football for Dublin for the last 10 years or so. And a friend of mine who I knew through Gaelic football, she was playing with Old Belvedere rugby club at the time, and she was trying to make it onto the Irish rugby squad. And she just basically encouraged me to go down to Old Belvedere and give rugby a go, and she felt like I'd be a really good fit. And I've always been really ambitious and keen to try new sports, and rugby was one that really intrigued me. So yeah, I followed her advice and went down to Old Belvedere, and it's taken me on an incredible journey throughout the years, and it's one of the best things I've ever done is start to play rugby.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, you've kind of touched on something there. You had a fantastic, you know, sporting career prior to rugby. I mean, you obviously played football for Dublin GAA, soccer for Shamrock Rovers. I mean, it must have been quite a difficult decision to focus on rugby exclusively.
Yeah, so I was playing with Dublin for so long. It had become such a part of my life. You know, I've been playing it since I was about 12 years of age with Dublin. And when rugby came along and I was given the opportunity to join the Irish Women's Sevens program, which basically is a contracted job for me and would become my full-time job, I had to step away from Gaelic football and any other sports. And I was, you know, playing at the time. And it was a really, really difficult decision because I was so committed to Dublin. But I suppose joining the Irish Sevens team was giving me an opportunity to really pursue a sport at a professional level or a semi-professional level. And it was just an opportunity I couldn't turn down. I had potentially a chance to go to the Olympics, you know, represent my country, travel the world, playing in this new sport that I just fell in love with. And that was something that Dublin GAA couldn't offer me, you know, and I really wanted to pursue my potential as an athlete. And you know, train and play in a high performance environment. And yeah, look, I took that step knowing that, you know, I could always go back and play Gaelic football, even at club level, when my rugby career finished.
So tell us about, I suppose, that first call up to represent Ireland. You know, how did that feel?
It was very surprising and strange. So I had only been playing rugby about 6 months at that stage. And I actually was playing for All Belvedere's second team because I was such a newbie to rugby, and Old Belvedere had a huge tradition of women's rugby. They were AIL champions. They had like 10 Irish internationals on the team. So I actually was just playing for a bit of fun with the seconds. And I got a phone call from Stan McDowell, who was the talent identification coach for the Irish women's sevens team at the time. And he basically asked me to come in for a trial and see how that, you know, went for me and how I felt. And I'd never actually played sevens before, just the 15 side of the game. So it was hugely exciting. And, you know, it was a huge opportunity for me. But, you know, I went in with an open mind and full of energy and just gave it my all. And I was lucky enough to get a contract at the end of the trial. It was an amazing feeling.
It's a rarity that someone ends up as an accidental international, but it's almost like kind of that was nearly what happened. You just weren't expecting it. But yes, you know, at the same time, when it fell into your lap, you grabbed it with both hands. And I think, you know, there's certainly a lot to be said for that. You mentioned you kind of cut your teeth playing sevens at an international level, but obviously you played 15s too. I mean, yeah. How do you find the transition between the two?
For me, I've been very lucky that over the course of my career, I have intermittently jumped between sevens and 15s. So while I was always contracted with the Irish women's sevens team, and that was my priority, I was often released throughout the years to play, you know, in the Six Nations and in the 2017 World Cup. So I became very used to the transitions. And so when it became a permanent thing to transition to 15s at the end of last summer, when I retired from sevens, it was quite seamless for me. And I find it really easy to be able to move across the codes and slot in. You know, I was lucky enough that in 15s at the time I was playing, you know, in the back three, and that's probably a little bit easier to slot in terms of technical rugby for 15s. So that probably made things a little bit easier for me. But I always loved playing the two and always wanted to play both when I could. And I was lucky enough throughout the years to be given that opportunity.
You mentioned that, you know, about transition, I suppose there's maybe a thread throughout this conversation, but you've recently moved to a new position, number 10. You know, how are you finding and enjoying that new challenge?
You know what? It's been an experience, to say the least. You know, moving from the back three and into 10, which is a much more demanding role, and you know, it's a lot of responsibility. It's been a really nice challenge for me. You know, like for me, I wasn't really expecting it, but when Adam Griggs, the head coach, asked me to move into it, I saw that as an opportunity for me to improve my skills and improve my leadership and my whole direction of the team. And I fully stepped into that role, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And I think my favorite part of being 10 is the kicking aspect. And that obviously comes from my GAA and soccer background. But I love kicking. I love being in control of the team, being able to kind of lead us around the field. And I'm really, really enjoying the new challenge that it brings.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I suppose on the flip side of that, then, what have you found to be the most challenging aspect of that move?
I suppose it's pretty much the same. It's that having to step up and be a leader, particularly in times when we might be under a lot of pressure in a game, you know, and everybody's turning to you about, like, you know, what do we do next? How do we fix this? And that can lead to a lot of pressure and can get you a little bit. But I'm enjoying that experience and enjoying that pressure. But there's a lot of learning in 10. You know, I'm still learning the game as a 10. And I'm trying to watch footage of other 10s, both male and female, to try and improve the game so it improves my team. But definitely just, I suppose, really knowing the role inside out and sometimes knowing other people's roles so you can direct them to where they need to be is the most challenging for me.
I think across the board, we were probably all incredibly disappointed to learn that the Women's Six Nations and World Cup qualifiers were to be postponed. With all the uncertainty over the last 12 months, how difficult has it been to stay motivated?
Yeah, look, the last year has been incredibly hard, but not just for, you know, sports and athletes, like for the whole world. And for us, it's just been difficult with the postponements. Like, so we have been gearing up for World Cup qualifiers that were initially meant to be in September, and then they were postponed to December. and then to February. Now we don't even know when they're on. And it's very, very hard to keep yourself motivated. But I suppose it's that desire to, you know, be the best athlete that you can be the best player you can be, and teammate. And also for us, because we haven't qualified for a World Cup, it's that motivation to actually go out there, qualify for that World Cup and make sure that we're in New Zealand in 2022 for that tournament. That's the one thing that is driving us on and keeping us going to, you know, every weekend at camp.
And how has your training been affected by COVID? I mean, I imagine there's a number of new protocols to adhere to and things like that.
Yeah, look, it's a whole new world. So initially last year when COVID came about, all our training was completely suspended and we were on an individual basis. But from August last year, we've been back in doing some team training because we thankfully qualify under the elite status in level 5. But yeah, look, there's a number of new protocols in place to, you know, the usual mask wearing, social distancing, training in pods, cleaning equipment afterwards, you know, not being able to use the facilities in the high performance unit in Blanche like we have been in the past. All of it has changed and how we go about it, but we will happily accept those changes and those protocols if it allows us to train every weekend. You know, we just want to get out there and train and play, and you know, if we have to social distance and wear masks and follow all the guidelines, we'll happily do it.
Brilliant. Yeah. So for you now, I suppose, what does kind of a typical pre-match routine look like?
On the day of a match, we tend to obviously get up, have breakfast, and we would do a bit of mobility as a team together and as a squad. Depending on what time of the day our matches are, if they're, you know, evening times, can be quite a long drawn out day, and it's about trying to fill that time, I suppose. For me, I tend to try and go back, have a nap and eat a few snacks, maybe call my family and make sure I get the hair done. You got to book in at the hairdressers. To make sure that your hair won't be in your eyes, you know, that's always a big thing. But I like to try stay around people, you know, because I tend to on game days, if you're on your own far too much, you can start to try and think and overthink the game a little bit too much. And then you, I suppose, start to think about maybe all the negative things that might, like, you know, things that might go wrong. So I try to surround myself with people and, you know, go off to a coffee shop or sit in the team room and have the chats. And there's usually a jigsaw there that people are working on. You know, and just make sure that I'm kind of in that positive frame of mind for leading into the game. And then obviously when we get into our, get on the team bus, it's, you know, put the headphones on, get into match day mode and, you know, start thinking about what you want to get out of this game and how you're going to put in a performance, you know. And it becomes quite, you know, if you've done it enough times, it becomes very natural to you. You don't even realize at the time that you're doing it, but it's just ensuring that you stay positive and you don't overthink the game. You know, you don't try and play the game before it's even played, you know.
So I have to ask, what's on the pre-match playlist?
Oh, look, for me, this is a terrible one. So I
put you in the spot now, I'm afraid.
I'm not like others who, you know, go for the like dance hits or the heavy beats or whatever else. I'm more like sticking on shuffle and it's either like Taylor Swift or Jessie Ware or whatever else. Not really very motivating songs, but they're more of a distraction for me. But yeah, they're like, it's kind of whatever I've recently listened to, but Taylor Swift is definitely in there, Jessie Ware, those kind of more chill music, but I don't think they'd be pumping anyone else up.
I assume that means you're not the dressing room DJ then in that case.
Oh, absolutely not. I would not be given that at all. I would bring the mood down terribly. It'd be like we're heading to a funeral.
Fair
that
enough.
Is usually Hannah O'Connor usually gets that honor. Or Annex, please.
You mentioned earlier on just about, I suppose, your role in the Sevens. And obviously you know, the Sevens, for those that don't know, it is a semi-professional contract. Ultimately, that's your day job. But here in Ireland, you know, the women's 15s is completely amateur. And whereas we've seen the likes of England move to a paid model, there's quite a clear disparity in the level of financial support between the men's and women's game, not just in Ireland, but internationally. I mean, how do you think we can begin to bridge the gender equality gap?
Yeah, look, it's a really difficult question to have, you know. we see that the men tend to draw in much bigger crowds and much bigger funds, and therefore they're going to see the outcome of that and much bigger wages. Like, we're completely amateur. The whole reason why the Six Nations ended up being postponed and delayed till April was because the majority of the teams in the competition were amateur, and we financially we couldn't afford to quarantine after our away matches, you know. And we end up going to work Monday to Friday, and then we train all weekend, whereas the guys have the luxury, and even like the women's English women's rugby team, they all have the luxury of using midweek to recover and get a bit of extra training in. And to be honest, the only way I personally think this is going to improve is that we get more people actually watching the women's game, going to the women's matches, and actually seeing the skill that is on show. You know, and kind of there was a campaign on last year, I'm not sure who it was by, but it was that whole idea of like, get bums on seats, because that's kind of how you show your support and how you get a bit of backing, which then hopefully will attract more sponsorship, get a bit of money and funding into the women's game. But it is, look, it's a worldwide issue. It's not just in rugby, it's in a number of sports across the board. You know, we've seen it on the biggest stage with the US women's soccer team and the US men's soccer team, and that whole wage dispute that they had. Like, it's a really difficult question to answer, but I would love, particularly in Ireland, to see more people, men and women, getting out, supporting the women, you know, watching the games, watching them on TV if needs be, and it hopefully should grow the game from there.
It must be a little bit daunting, I suppose, knowing that, you know, particularly within the Six Nations, that you come up against England, it's effectively an amateur team versus a professional team. I mean, how do you kind of deal with that prior to the match?
Well, like, besides it being England and, like, you know, you should need no motivation to want to play and beat them, I suppose, me personally, you know, I can't really speak for many of the girls, but I use it as a, these girls are meant to be professional. These girls are meant to be the best of the best, and you know, they get to train week in, week out, and only train and not have to worry about anything else. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to show them that, you know, myself as classed as an amateur athlete, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to beat you and show you that I have more heart and more desire and passion than you do, and that, you know, could you imagine how good we would be if we were professional? You know, it's that whole challenge of, these guys are professional. Everyone's expecting them to, you know, hammer us because they're professional and we're amateur. Let's go out there and show them that there's more to this than money.
Brilliant. Love it. That's great. Specifically for women's rugby, I mean, how important is sponsorship for athletes to be able to succeed on the elite level?
Well, like, as I said, you know, we are completely amateur in how we're run. I have my teaching job Monday to Friday to get me to pay the bills, to, you know, pay for my own football boots to get me onto the pitch and get me training. Just to have a little bit of extra support from a company, you know, even if it's only something small, it can be such a confidence boost to know that there are people out there who believe in us, you know, and who are willing to support us and show us that, you know, they see us on the same level as men, and that, you know, that we deserve this. It's just really nice and refreshing to have companies who are willing to back you in that. And it does, it gives you a huge confidence boost. It makes you want to, I suppose, nearly repay them by putting in big performances on the pitch and showing them that I got to this level because of the help and the support that you gave me, you know. And like I said, a lot of the time, and it's not the men's fault, but a lot of the time they're absolutely handed things left, right and centre, while you have a lot of women, you know, international players in every sport struggling through, and any little bit of help and support and sponsorship is a massive, massive deal to them because they know how much of a difference it's going to make in their life.
Yeah. So in your opinion, you know, did you find it difficult, or have you seen it be difficult for athletes, particularly in female sport, to secure sponsorship or gain, you know, attention in comparison to the men?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose I can only speak from my own experiences and some of, you know, the teammates that I've seen, like, in that, like, we all on the team, bar a few like that, buy our own football boots, and the majority of us buy our own you know, gear, whether that's for me, shoulder pads and whatever else. And like, For me personally, I look at another player who has way less caps than me on the men's team, and already they have been secured sponsorship deals with high profile companies, you know, and then we have some of our best players who are extremely well known on the international stage. You know, we probably, in someone like Claire Malloy, who is our number seven, she's been named the best number seven in the world, yet hardly any people in Ireland know her name, and I don't think she has one sponsorship deal. You know, she's someone who is such a huge role model for women in Ireland, can do so much and puts her body on the line each time. And there's just such a huge disparity in the sponsorship deals that are given out. And again, that comes from the women having much less of a profile, I suppose, than the men do because of what we see in the media and on the TV and stuff like that. So I'd love to see that change. I'd love to see more women and more female athletes being given these sponsorship deals so they're able to focus on their training and their performances and that alone and not have to worry about any of that off the pitch and actually can be the best athlete they can be.
Yeah, I think to be fair, you kind of already offered a solution there in the sense that it really does come down to, you know, getting bums on seats. Ultimately, that's, you know, that's what breaks this vicious cycle. For you personally, I mean, what are some of the brands that you rely on to perform at your peak or just enjoy daily?
My favorite things that I use, obviously, look, I'm a huge food lover and I'm massively reliant on like the likes of supplements to just make sure. I've always been a little bit of a skinnier build, so I'm always trying to protect my body and put a little bit of weight on. So Kinetica is something that I use daily in a number of products that I have in a supplement point of view. If you've ever seen me walking down the street, I'm a huge Adidas fan. I'm head to toe in Adidas just because I think it's such comfortable clothing and they're the boots that I wear constantly all the time. I use just stuff that are always in my kick bag or would be Red Bull. I drink it before every training session, every game. Some of my cleaning products or body wash products and that were Nuasan, who are an Irish sustainable company that are brilliant. And yeah, they'd be kind of my favourites. Manhattan popcorn be another that I'm massively fan of as a snack.
I suppose maybe coming away or looking at off the field, I mean, you've been incredibly outspoken about your struggles with mental health and your ambassadorship with Pieta House and the Tackle Your Feelings campaign it's been a source of great pride for us here at Sport Endorse. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the work you've done with both.
Yeah, so in 2016, I became a Tackle Your Feelings ambassador, which was a campaign that was set up by the Irish Rugby Union's Players Association. And they basically wanted to create a campaign to highlight that, you know, mental health is something that everybody will struggle with within their daily lives. And it makes no difference whether you're, you know, an ordinary person or whether you're an international rugby player, that we all kind of suffer with this. And they try to promote the awareness of mental health and give links and research and information to people about how they might be able to reach out and get help for it. And I joined that campaign because I myself in the past have struggled with an eating disorder and with self-harm. And I suppose the reason why I got involved was that I was happy to talk about my story and in order to help somebody else who might have been struggling at that time. Because for me, you know, I went through a really, really tough time with it, but I didn't speak out or I didn't know how to even reach out and ask for help. And I wanted to make sure that there was somewhere that people could turn to, or there was, you know, a link or a campaign that people could look at and see that they weren't the only person struggling, you know, with their mental health, that others have done it too, and that there is help available out there and that you can recover from it. And I partnered with Pieta House not long after, because when I was struggling with my eating disorder and my self-harm, I attended Pieta House as a client in order to receive therapy to try and you know, get over my struggles. And when they asked me to come on board as an ambassador for them, I was only too happy to, you know, give back to them and try and help spread awareness for them. And yeah, look, I'm so, so delighted to be a Pieta House ambassador. And, you know, the Tackle Your Feelings campaign is still going on really, really well. And I think it's just really improved. I suppose the awareness around mental health in Ireland in the last number of years, you know, and I'm glad to have played a part, even if it's a very small part, I'm glad to have played a part in that.
Well, look, I don't think it's a small part by any means. And I think I speak for everyone when I say that, you know, the work you're doing is incredible.
Thank you.
And so really well done. Looking ahead, I suppose, and that kind of, we've touched on transition and we're kind of going to go back to it now, but that transition, you know, away from sport. I mean, what are your kind of aspirations beyond sport for the future?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I'm no spring chicken anymore, you know, and I'm getting on a little bit. But for me, as I mentioned, I'm a secondary school teacher, and I've only recently qualified from that in the last couple of years because, you know, I realized that rugby is not something that I can do for the rest of my life, you know, and that financially it wasn't going to support me in my long-term goals. So, you know, with joining the 15s team and becoming amateur, I was able to take up a post in a secondary school and, you know, teach my passion, which is history and geography. And it's been really, really refreshing so far for me to have something to, like, you know, that's not just sport and that I love doing, to kind of throw myself into it, particularly in COVID when it's been, you know, quite difficult, that I had something else that I love to do to throw myself into. And that's something now that I'm, you know, looking forward to being involved in for the next, I don't know, however long I end up as a teacher. But yeah, outside of teaching, when I end up eventually giving up the rugby and the GAA and sport, I'd love to give back to sport in some way. And, you know, I would love to try and get into some sort of like broadcasting or analysis of sports and everything else. I love all sports, you know, and it ranges from like, I'm an NFL addict every Sunday night. I'm up watching all the games. I know all the teams and the moves and the plays and everything else. But I'll also then, you know, watch the Olympics for hours and hours every day when it's on, watching a range of sports. And I'd love to be able to get into some sort of, you know, broadcasting or analysis or commentary of any sport, because I think, and I'm going to brag a little bit here, but I think I could be quite good at it actually. You know, when I have a bit of, I suppose, public speaking behind me, and, you know, I've a little bit of confidence in that. So hopefully that'll be something I can turn my hand to a little bit in the next couple of years.
Brilliant. Yeah. And look, I think I'd certainly watch you on RTE. Absolutely.
Thanks.
I suppose just kind of coming back to that transition piece. I mean, look, we've seen, even just this week, CJ Stander stepping away for family reasons, and perhaps some might argue, you know, with a few years left, you know, left his playing career. I mean, when you think about when the time will come, I mean, is that something you're apprehensive about? Are you perhaps looking forward to it a little bit?
Like, I think there's a little bit of both. You know, so it's not quite the same, but I retired officially from the Women's Sevens program last year. And it was something that prior to the start of that season, I had kind of made my decision that this is going to be the last year that I play. And I had one little asterisk beside that, and that was if we were to qualify for the Olympics, I would hang on. But while it happened, it was quite sad, but it was something I was also looking forward to, because for me at the time, I also had my sights set on joining the Women's 15s team and qualifying for the World Cup. So while I knew it was coming and it was quite sad to be leaving something I enjoyed for so long, I had a goal and I had a plan in mind that I was trying to reach. So, you know, I was looking forward to that. And I think it's the same, you know, for me with the 15s side. You know, I think, getting to my age, I'm in my 30s now, that after this World Cup in 2022, I'll probably think about retiring. You know, and yeah, it's daunting to think of that because it's been such a big part of my life for so long. But, you know, there's so many more aspects to my life than just sport, you know, and I've so many other good things going on that it'll be nice to be able to really put my heart and soul into those things and explore new things. Like, you know, one thing I can't wait to do is I want to go skiing, but I can't go skiing because if I go skiing and break my leg or do my knee, and that's me gone for the rugby season. And, you know, there's all these little things and these sacrifices that you have to make when you are an international rugby player that people don't really see. You know, look, not being able to go skiing yet is not a big deal, but I can't wait to do it. You know, and the things I've been putting off, and I've missed friends' weddings and birthdays, and, you know, lots of celebrations out now. So I can't wait for a time when I don't have to be like, hold on, I check my calendar and see if I have a match. You know, like, I'm meant to be getting married this year, and we were actually meant to be getting married on the 9th of April, but we had to postpone it because of COVID. But, and the reason why I chose April was because I'm like, never any rugby in April. Six Nations ends in March. If, because of COVID, we actually have a game the weekend of the 9th of April. So if we hadn't have actually changed our wedding because of COVID, I would have had to miss a rugby match for my wedding day or try to change my wedding day because of rugby. So I'm really looking forward to that kind of, I suppose, aspect of it, not having to try and rearrange my life and have to book in a coffee date with someone, you know, 6 months in advance to make sure I'm free. But yeah, I suppose I'm just looking forward to a new challenge, and it'll be sad and it'll be daunting, but I'll know when the time is right, and I think I'll be at peace with that.
I imagine your fiance is delighted that you said you would have to miss a rugby match for your wedding and not the other way around.
Well, there was a couple of conversations about that, to be honest. But no, thankfully she's we had moved it to August because of COVID, and then the Six Nations fixtures came out, and I had to be like, oh look, we have a rugby match now. So yeah, I got away with that one by the skin of my teeth.
Happy coincidence. I suppose, you know, again, looking at, you know, that kind of retirement, you know, and oftentimes players look back and they think about what legacy they've left. I mean, you know, for you personally, how important is legacy, and you know, how would you like to be remembered as a rugby international?
Well, for me, I suppose, first of all, when I think of that, I think of my teammates, and I want to be remembered as someone who gave their all in the green jersey, and not just in matches, but in training, you know, in everything that I did relating to rugby on and off the pitch. You know, I want to be seen as a good teammate. I want to stay friends with these girls after I finish playing. And I suppose, yeah, I just want to be remembered for someone who gave it their all and, you know, was able to put a smile on people's faces at times, because for me, I know I'm in a very privileged position to play for Ireland, that there's, you know, hundreds and thousands of girls around the world whose only dream it is to play rugby for their country. And some of them will never realise that dream. So I suppose it's cherishing each moment in the jersey and being able to look back on that with fond memories, and people being able to be like, I loved watching you play. You always played with a smile on your face, with your heart in your sleeve, and you gave it your best shot.
Speaking of memories and looking back in your career so far, and perhaps it hasn't happened yet, but what's been your favourite sporting moment?
Oh, God. This is a really difficult one for me because, you know, both in sevens and 15s, getting my first cap was phenomenal. Like, it was amazing, particularly because it was something I never thought I'd do. I never even thought I'd pick up a rugby ball. But I think one of the proudest moments for me was lining out for the national anthem in 2017 in the home World Cup that we had in Dublin in UCD. We played Australia, I think it was, yeah, Australia in our first game. And it was a sold out game, which was the first time that we ever had a women's rugby match actually sell out. And I had people texting me, you know, the night before in the morning off being like, can you get me any tickets? Can you get me any tickets? Which never happens in women's rugby. Or like, it's a lot more frequent now, but it had never happened before. And it was just amazing. And to be belting out your anthem, playing in a World Cup and a home World Cup at that, with your family and friends and a huge crowd behind you, it was amazing, you know. And to get the win was obviously an added bonus, you know. But definitely in 15s, that is that, and winning the Six Nations. It's hard to pick one.
It's tough when you've had such a fantastic career to just pick one moment, I suppose. But look, it's a high class problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I'm not complaining. Like, I know I've had a good.
If you were to look back and, I suppose, look at, you know, one piece of advice that you were given that you'd like to impart to aspiring athletes, what would it be?
I suppose it's just keep working hard and keep practicing. You know, like, there's so many times, particularly for myself, being a latecomer to rugby, like, it was. Rugby is a very skillful game, you know, but and it just requires a lot of patience and a lot of practice and determination. And it's one of those, never give up, keep going. I love the quote of that, you know, fall down seven times, stand up eight, because it's just a representation, not just of rugby, but of general sports, where it's not always going to go your way, particularly first time. So you just got to keep trying and trying and trying, and I guarantee you will improve and things will start to go right for you.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, look, we tend to like to try and finish off the interview with something a little bit more fun. And as our first guest from a team sport, we're going to put you in the spot and ask you a couple of quick fire questions about your Irish teammates.
Okay. I'm sorry, guys. Please don't be mean to me.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Best dancer?
Anna Capeless.
Worst fashion sense?
Anna Capeless.
Best fashion sense?
Best fashion sense of our team. Emer Considine.
The dressing room DJ.
Hannah O'Connor / Anna Capeless.
Who's most likely to sleep through their alarm?
Eve Higgins.
Who's least likely to answer their phone if you called?
Me. I hate answering the phone. I don't want to.
Who's the fastest?
Bavin Parsons.
Who's the team joker?
Hannah O'Connor.
Most likely to be late to training?
I'll be harsh on this, but Lily Pete, but she does have a child, so I completely understand.
Some allowances to be made there, fair enough. Okay, and then finally, who is or who thinks they're the most intelligent?
She probably is the most intelligent. I'm going to say, and I don't think she thinks, I'll give it to Lauren Delaney. She probably is the most intelligent. But you could probably put Bavin Parsons in there too.
Fair enough. Well, listen, before we get Hannah in any more trouble, I think we'll bring this week's episode to a close. Hannah, it's been a true pleasure chatting to you. Best looking preparations for the Six Nations and the World Cup going forward. And hopefully we'll be watching you in action soon.
So much, guys. Really enjoyed the chat.
That's all for this week. Thanks once again to Hannah and to everyone continuing to download and listen to The Sit Down. We truly appreciate your support. Thank you to our sponsors, Nielsen. You can find them across social media or at www.nielsen.com. If you're interested in partnering with any of our talent, the Sport Endorsed platform is now live. You can review and engage talent at www.platform.sportendorsed.com or download the Sport Endorsed app through the Apple Store or Google Play. Be sure to follow Sport Endorsed on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And until next time, take care.